way ahead of her time, and what a great track to start the final hour here on SFM. Nina Simone and Cinnamon. It's the choice of our guest presenter today, who is none other than Marion Tam. Who is Marion? Well, she is an author. She is a journalist. She is the associate editor of the Daily Maverick. She's a comedy scriptwriter, yep, a theatre producer, presenter, and much, much more. We're absolutely delighted to have you on the line. Marion Tam, thank you so much for joining the JSB.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I love your show. You know it. Yes, I'll tweet you while you're on. Oh, yeah.
I want to just ask you about that song, Nina Simone's Cinnamon. And we've got a fantastic young engineer. He's 21. He's our new engineer in the studio, Ntando, and doing brilliant work, I have to say. And every time someone asks for a song to be played on the show, he says, oh, I don't know this song, which made me start to think about how the people that are choosing the songs are older, and therefore everybody who's listening is older and knows the song. But then there's a whole new audience who's never heard of Nina Simone. So how does that make you feel? I mean, you have kids yourself. It's an interesting conversation around how we think about music, what we know, but also what we don't know.
Yes. I mean, that she's the high priestess for me, and I cannot spend a single day of my life without music. And it's for me always been an emotional connection to the greater humanity. And both my children, I'm pleased to announce, are both going to be involved in the music industry in one way or another. So Nina Simone, for me, I grew up in the 70s when much of the music was political and about resistance.
Yeah.
And I thought all music would be like that. I didn't realize at the time that I was living in a time of political music. Mm. And people like Bob Marley, Nina Simone, brought to the world another voice from America. So the power of music is incredible, and also just to motivate. If you put that thing on in the morning in the car or when you're driving to a show, when you get on that stage, you are channeling an energy that is universal. Nina pushes you there.
You are channeling an energy that's universal. And I was thinking about it as I was listening to it. You know, that portion of the song where she repeats the word power. And
yeah.
Just the repetition of that word, how it then sinks in with regards to what it is that she's actually singing about and how she manages to do that.
Yeah. And then also just those incredibly powerful gospel rhythms at the background, you know, using the religious incantation, which is so well known in America and in American black politics.
Yeah.
In order to push forward a song of just get up, resistance, fight back. And for me, our constitution embodies that power for everybody. So that's my song.
Marion, you mentioned going to a show, and it talks to the diversity of work that you do, and yet you might be a journalist because you've written the book Hitler for Wout Mandela and Me. You are the associate editor at the Daily Maverick. You are a journalist, so you write a lot of stuff in terms of journalism. You are also, though, a scriptwriter and an actress. I suppose a performer. Let's say a performer before we say an actress. But they're all the same thing, actually, in the end, because they're all about narrative and perhaps telling story, whether it's fiction, non-fiction. It's about ensuring that you can tell diverse stories, particularly about yourself and our country.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about journalism for me, it's almost my fallback job, because journalism should be sort of the reportage when you're younger of what you witness, what you see, and how you try and fit that into the context in which it's happening, which is a very good discipline. It teaches you to look and to engage and to think and not just go along with it. And so if you do that for over 40 years, you do develop a particular way of working. But at the same time, remember, I'm half Portuguese. And when I went to Portugal, I realized everybody talks loud like me. Everyone's moving their hands. Everyone's got a story to tell. So there's some cultures who are more animated in telling stories than others. And I seem to have got that gene. But at the same time, in my reporting, I love to meet ordinary people. And I do meet ordinary people. And I love them. So I love South Africans. And so this show is that I've kind of constructed by accident is just to celebrate how we have dealt with the past trauma of the last 15 years, and And some, there's something extremely common in all of it, in all of us. So in times of political turmoil all over the world, you will find people making the best arts or being required to take the best of themselves into the public to make a difference. It's not just popcorn.
Yeah.
It's not just about you. So all those songs of the 1970s, Marvin Gaye, all the soul music, it's all political.
Yeah.
Every single one of those songs. And about community and about humanity. And so a lot, I mean, the best songs in the world are not about, apart from Adele maybe, so it's like personal trauma, ongoing, relentless personal growth and trauma. And while that's a lot of fun, it's a very 21st century way of doing music, which is very, you know, personal and intimate.
It's a very 21st way of looking at certain generations. I mean, there are generations that, as you say, are more to the public and the political, and generations that are more to the personal and the private. I mean, we talk about the millennials. We talk about the Z generation and how they think about the world. I mean, it does feel as though it's far more retracted internally, if that makes any sense.
Well, you see, I think that that's also a good thing, because with freedom comes that ability to go inside and see who you are, to find the comfort and peace. And I think a lot of people in this country don't have that space. But, you know, those young people who have been freed from the anxiety and worries of the hectic days of South Africa are lucky, because there are many who haven't been freed yet. But we need to connect the two. And they are, it's happening. It is happening.
I want to ask you about the play. I haven't seen it yet. A round of applause. South Africa is still standing. You have to let us know when you're coming back to Joburg. In fact, a couple of us were actually talking about it last night. I was at the Joburg, the UJ Theatre, and we were just talking about the fact is, when is it coming back? Is it going to come back? Because we'd be interested in seeing it. Is it coming back, first of all?
Well, yes, I think it is. It's coming to Houghton at some point. I think on the 17th and 18th. I'm going to check the dates. Of April. You know, it's not even a show, Michelle. I think it's just, I call it performance journalism. And it came about purely by accident. I'd been invited to something lovely that Brett Bailey does every year at Sphere, which is called Talking Heads. And then people pay and come and listen to various creatives and other people talk about their lives. And sort of people shift and rotate during the evening. And during that evening, nobody at my table, and they were all well-informed, well-read people who could afford a ticket, knew how we stopped the nuclear deal. Nobody knew what the Kolobeni community did to stop seismic blasting in the ocean. And I realized I'd watched 4 years of the Zondo Commission. I'd seen great legal minds at work. And I'm actually every day, you know, kind of in the stream.
It's a privilege.
So, that's right. And I know more, not because I'm cleverer, but just because I'm there. So I thought, how do I make what I've gone through in the last 15 years and what journalists have gone through and the country has gone through, how do I make it palatable and easy to consume while at the same time we all know what's wrong? Let me show you what went right. What did we do that helped us get through to a very traumatic time, right through to this place where we are now, where we are sitting with the most exciting election I think this country is going to be having since 1994. I mean, it would be worse for us if we were in America at the moment. 65 countries in the world are having elections, and ours are the most exciting. I mean, you know, we've got, like, we love ourselves an election in this country, love democracy. We've got 300 parties have registered, 1,000 independents, you know, and that's beautiful. That's fantastic. It shows you the enthusiasm for democracy.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. Marion, we have to go to a break, but when we come back, I want to just go to the title of the play, A Round of Applause, South Africa is Still Standing. And there's a couple of thoughts that I'd like to pass to you and see what you think. Let's go to the break, and when we come back, we'll chat.
At SAFM Radio and at Mesh Constant on SAFM.
We're chatting to Marion Tam, journalist, author, script writer, and much more. And she has a show that is called A Round of Applause, South Africa is Still Standing. You know, Marion, when I first read that title, I thought about this idea of resilience. And, you know, I think some people know that I think resilience is a bit like our government gaslighting us. They're telling us we're so resilient. Oh, and now the load shedding is going to go to 6 or whatever the case may be. And I wondered if that was something you were thinking about when you were like, we're still freaking standing and we do deserve the applause.
I'd like to look at it slightly deeper than that, because when I've gone around and seen, so you can have a look at like what happened during COVID.
Yeah.
Suddenly people, without any prompting, realized that other people needed help. And in the neighborhood I live in, they started something called Ladles of Love.
Yeah.
So the resilience is not about us being able to get over with stuff. I mean, the July 2021 horrendous violence that happened in KZN. Richard Poplack, my darling colleague, he's a complete sort of nihilist, and I'm a pessimistic optimist. Mm. And I told him we would clean up that mess ourselves, and we did.
Yeah.
And we even had a woman playing, a white woman playing, called Isikileri Africa on the piano in the street that was bombed to nothing. You know, so the round of applause is for the people I've seen who do things for other people. Today there's a story in the report about the woman who looked after Jocelyn when nobody else did.
Yeah.
There are people feeding other people who nobody writes about.
Yeah.
You know, just people putting children through school, getting things done. An appeal happens for a child who needs a kidney, and South Africans rally.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. And then there's, you know, old Elton John talks about I'm still standing. It's just a lovely way of just finding again in ourselves, you know, something better than just screaming at each other, which is what is happening internationally with politicians.
I have to say, I read a fantastic article about the screaming. I think it was in the New Yorker, about people screaming at one another and how we need to shift back to other conversations. And he demonstrated how, you know, he's a surfer in California, and he was just saying how the place that he used to go and surf was usually so calm, and people were just like, I mean, the waves were gnarly, and he was just like, it was cool. And he said, now suddenly surfers are yelling at each other, and he's like, he's never seen anything like this before. And I thought, how intriguing, and where does that all come from? Is that from having politicians who scream and shout, or is that from having social media that allows people to scream and shout anonymously? And where does that come from, you know?
I think it does come from the anxieties that is created by the consumption of only social media, and where you don't interact face to face with people anymore. So your little private space becomes your little private space. Mm. You see it in driving as well. While a lot of South Africans are very anarchic about driving, and I mean anarchic in the true sense, so when the robots go, we let each other in. We work out a system to a certain extent. But there will always be that one person who doesn't go along with the community. If you drop your basket in Woolworths, people will help you pick it up. That's a kind of community thing. But this screaming is as a result of people feeling they can do so on social media, usually anonymously. It started off in the beginning. Then it became quite open. And when men like Donald Trump and Jacob Zuma and others talk about women's bodies as if they own them, and that they're entitled to it, that, you know, feminism and Black Lives Matter is all fake news, then the people who are angry and grumpy and who have shit lives take it out on the rest of us, and then they make us angry. So we're like a troop of baboons just hitting each other the whole time, you know? And we somehow need to understand that this is the consequence of a global narrative where men are banging drums, shouting, and shooting off weapons everywhere. It's a global crisis, and that's not who we are.
I would argue that a troop of baboons is more sentient and civilized, but there we go. Let's move with that. Marion, you... And also, I just wanted to note, you know, talk about people doing acts of genuine kindness. I don't know if you know the academic Jessica Auerbach. She put together a really interesting book during the time of COVID, of stories of people that had done really, really good things for other families, for other communities, for other members in the community. And so you're quite correct when you say that South Africans in general are quite appropriate in their actions and positive in their actions as well. Marion, your second song, Child of Vision by Supertramp, taking us back a bit, but the choice?
It's one of those songs that when I was growing up spoke to me. They sell you Coca-Cola, they told you that it's good. You know, I was a child that was living in a country that had no vision whatsoever. And so hearing that song spoke to me. It made me realize I could make a choice. And so the words matter to me, and I would love children to listen to it. I don't know which of my last songs you're going to play. But for me, when I was growing up, music connected me emotionally to my sexual feelings, to my political feelings, my existential feelings, and my philosophical emotions. So music is, to me, the highest form of art. And this song touched me deeply in Pretoria and became a walking staff for me.
So, you know, one of our listeners says, I'm older, but I do know Nina Simone, not this one. And I want to say thank you to the power of radio and what a great show. So just thinking about how that all works together. Let's go. Supertramp, Child of Vision. Oh, abso-frickin-lutely glorious. And I'm laughing because Ntando's eyes and ears have got bigger. He's learned something new today. And that's what we want for everyone on the show. Graham says, it's intriguing. It's a sting. I used to surf, and then an emoji of like horror. So suggesting that the shouting in surfing is something that he's not aware of. It's fabulous radio. I love the depth and width, Michelle. Going from Professor Zakes and Dar, we're going to Cineman and also Marian Tam as well. And Marian Tam is our guest presenter today. And as a journalist, we're opening the floor for her to interview her very own guests and, as you've heard, play her own music as well, playing Supertramp and Child of Vision. Man, that song, unbelievably fabulous. You have to admit that, Marian, just like, it's your choice song. It's just,
if I could play piano like that and get lost as well, it just go with it. It just takes your head into a different space that you need to clear it.
Absolutely glorious. Okay, so here's the deal. We have to go to a break. I want to get the break out of the way quickly. And then we're going to go to your very first guest, Dr. Patricia Watson. Now, you've chosen Patricia for a variety of reasons. Tell us about that.
Well, I think that if you look at this initiative that's happening, and if you look at what my main core belief is, that people do things for other people, looking at localized economies and opening up spaces for people that they usually don't have access to is what attracted me to sort of just going to the school and having a look at what this vision.
Okay, we have no idea what you're talking about. School, what vision,
all right.
Initiative. Well, it all sounds good. Let's go to the break and you can come back and break it out.
That's it.
The Jet Set Breakfast with Michelle Constant.
So our guest presenter is Marian Tam. As you know, she is a journalist, an author, associate editor, comedy script writer, presenter of interesting things, and presenter today. How does it work here on the show? Super simple. You get to choose the music, and what some great music. And Dosh is coming online to me off air and saying, whoa, fantastic selection. Nina Simone, Supertramp, and wait till you hear the third song as well. She also gets to choose her own guests, and her first guest is Dr. Patricia Watson, about an event, an initiative, a project, a possibility, an opportunity. What is it, Marion? All of the above.
All of the above. Dr. Watson, fill us in. Tell us about your involvement and why and what this is all about and how I got involved in something that I believe is going to be an annual and ongoing thing. Hello?
Hello, hi. Yes, Vision 24 is going to be an awesome occasion, especially because about 30 visual artists have been given spaces to exhibit their work, and it really is an opportunity. I think it's the first art fair where artists are being given a space to be authentic, to fill the space without censorship, and to allow themselves to share their creativity with others. And when I heard that Susan Proctor was offering to do this for the arts community, I thought this is exactly what I like. It's up my street. It's about democratizing the arts. And it's giving artists back their right to publics and to spaces. Because really, when you create work, the most exciting thing is when other people embrace that work and want it so badly, they want to take it home with them and make it their own. There can be no sweeter exchange between human beings than that moment of someone's creative work entering another person's life.
Dr. Watson, if I may, you talk about democratizing the arts, and I'm a big believer in that, but I also think one wants to democratize the arts, but one also wants to allow artists to do what they believe in. Talk to us about how you balance those kinds of things out.
Balance for me is quite a personal one, because the act of making is one that calls you, you know, into your own work as a human being and your own struggles with reality and relating to your experiences. And art making is a form of expression of all of that complexity, and it allows you to synthesize that complexity, sometimes in meaningful ways and sometimes in abstract ways. But the act of balance for me is a very personal one of negotiating the mark making, the color, the image that emerges from that color. It's not something that I offer to the world to mediate for me in with an external protagonist. For me, the balance is built on internal relations with my own conversations. And so the democratizing process for me is about how markets set up precedents for aesthetics, and they come in waves, and things are liked or not liked. And for me, the democratization is to say, well, give the space back to artists to decide what they're doing is what is in vogue or fashionable. And I'm very frustrated by the gatekeeping in art, in the art world, because it's built around economies that don't even necessarily include the artists themselves. And so for me, about giving those markets back to artists to show what they're doing is, for me, so revolutionary. And I hope it's the future. I hope that that's where we're moving more and more and more.
So, and
Michelle, if I just can just come in here for a second, because what's lovely about this as well is that their partnerships with the, you know, the Peter Clark Art Center, and their, you know, art lessons are given in the library at the school and sort of other satellite centers in the Western Cape. And so what starts happening is the Ocean View Library, Ocean View, the working class neighborhood right next door to Komiki, these outreach programs also teach young artists how to market their own work. You know, if you have social media today and you are making art on your own, there aren't gatekeepers who are going to stop you from being able to show your work. Fashion, I mean, the kind of things young people do, and our artists, the ceramic work, we are way ahead of other people in the world. I've seen, I mean, we're starting with Bonnie and Charlie's work back in the 80s.
Wow.
These outreach programs help young people who don't have access to other spaces to learn about, you know, the creative contribution that you make and how you shape it and how you live in it. And so what this is for me is a nurturing educational space, welcoming space. And so I agreed to do my show there because I just want, it's part of what I believe in, which is just, this is it, where we do things for each other, with each other, and celebrate what we have. Because if we're not doing that, then we're busy shooting each other and killing each other. So we have no option.
So let me just, Vision 24 is a series of performances, workshops, visual art events, which are taking place in the Ocean View area on the 21st and 22nd of March. And I understand that you've got the Ocean View Public Library as one of the partners as well. And I suppose this is a question that I'll put to both of you. I'm thinking about, Marianne, the My Body, My Space Festival, which takes place in Mbudulweni in Mpumalanga. And it goes out into a really rural area. It's a festival of same thing, performances, workshops, visual arts, dance, etc. And the very nature of the location, so where you find the geography of that particular event, is part of the ability to democratize those spaces.
Absolutely, absolutely. And people like Ricardo Arensa and Leanne Van Roy are doing that with theater. So they go and, I mean, they've exposed kids in spaces who've never seen theater and brought education and messages. And that's the kind of way we are going to build new audiences and show young people that the arts, you know, I think it was, I'm trying to remember, Robert Hughes wrote the three ways to make sense of the world. That's religion, politics, and the arts. And the first two are unreliable.
Patricia, can I ask you, you are a bureaucrat in your one world. But that doesn't make you a bureaucrat alone. But what it may do is offer you a kind of sense of how to process events of this nature, how to operate and organize events of this nature. Talk to us about that.
Okay, so I've had many self-inventions, and I like to see myself as fluidly negotiating a meaningful life. And making art and painting and affording myself an opportunity to do that is really inspired by my work with children, because children are so instinctive and they allow their intuition to negotiate things that they may not be able to put into words. And we're going into, I think, the next administration that's really going to put a big emphasis on play and what does it mean to play. And so as an adult, I've really committed to embracing the child within me and allowing that child to play, whether that's dance or movement or theatre or song or mark making. I think that when we engage children, finding other modes of having that conversation with them rather than asking them the questions that can them up, like, how was your day at school today? What did you learn? Those are things children don't want to answer after a full day of being routined and scrutinized by the schooling system. What they want is people that want to allow them to actually go into their imaginations, process their feelings. And I think the arts allow us to do that. And what I'm so delighted about is we've got all this 21st century rhetoric about being creative and being critical. And yet so much of the last 15 years has been about closing down the creative.
Yeah.
And I think that we're at the precipice now. We're embracing all opportunities for creativity are urgent, necessary, and compelling. And what I think that the Vision 24 occasion, event, moment, hopefully an ongoing moment does, is it shows us that creativity is a thread that runs through all of us. Whether we're rich, whether we're poor, whether we're reading, whether we're not reading, whether we're in school or out of school. And I think that creativity allows us to bridge class lines, because inequality is probably the biggest disruptor to children and to children having the conditions that allow them to reach their full potential. But if we can see the lines of creativity between us, I think we will allow different futures to emerge.
Dr. Patricia Watson, thank you so much for joining us as Marianne's guest. And the Vision 24 Art Fair is going to take place at the Generation Schools Imhof next weekend, Thursday and Friday. Thursday, of course, is a public holiday. We'll tell you more about it in a moment. But Marianne, we're going into your final song. Ntando raised his hands. He says, I know this well.
Which one have you chosen again? I'm trying to remember.
Damien Marley.
Oh, Damien Marley. Oh, the son of Bob. The son who inherited the mysticism. The other sons, I'm not so sure. the wonderful thing for me is to discover the man who kind of was my political, spiritual guide, Bob, has a son. And this song is a song for my daughters and for us as adults. And because he also understands we need to teach children, we must show them. You can't tell them what to do. We must teach them. And they and I love this song because that's what it's about.
Oh, Marianne, thank you. Such a beautiful track that. We're all just like nodding our heads saying, so a child may follow. So for anyone who's thinking about future generations, for anyone who has children, how do you make the world a better place? Marianne, your second guest is, and our guest is Marianne Tam, well known, I am sure. Yandiswa Mazwana, founder of the Masi Creative Hub. Tell us a little bit about your guest and why.
Well, Masi is a space that that occupies a very important part of the Southern Peninsula as well, where people have lived. There have been fires. Many of the people who live there interact with the suburbs around. And so it's important to find people who are also willing to reach out and work with And I think, you know, this is a kind of testament to that kind of work that is being done, again, by residents in that area who don't just look away and who don't get engaged. And that's what's going to make South Africa great and what makes us great. And people, like everyone involved in this, absolutely.
Yandiswa, the founder of the Masipumelela Creative Hub, when I read the kind of work that the Creative Hub has done, it's really extraordinary. I mean, the feeding schemes alone are absolutely massive. Talk to us about what you see as the cornerstone of your work, the food security.
Good morning to everybody who's there. And thank you very much, Maren, for making me your guest. The cornerstone for Master Creative Hub, I think, is to help or is to support young people in Masipumelela to acquire good skills and better future and take full responsibility of developing their own community or society accordingly and just be part of the change.
So, Marianne, you have spoken, you have chosen Yandiswa as your second guest, but it's also because it's Yandiswa is doing work as well as part of the Vision 24 Art Fair. Tell us about
That's correct. I think let Yandiswa tell us about it because she knows more than I do. It's so much happening. It's 30 exhibitions. I mean, if you look at this wonderful festival, when I initially got invited, I thought, you know what you think, school festival, This is a well-organized, beautiful, and I think what I like about that is that you see the effort put in. So I think let's let Yandiswa tell us how she's going to be involved in this particular festival and where the money goes and how it fits in with everything else.
Yandiswa, over to you.
thank you. Master Creative Hub will be kind of establishing a creative baobab tree, which is 110% recycled scatter, and products that are going to be sold there. And whatever that is made that day, it goes to our different programs' needs. So the organization runs several programs. The Nourish Child, Dignity, Boys and Girls Program, the Garden Champions, and the Creative Hub itself. So it will be like kind of spent accordingly.
So I want to ask you, you know, Yandiswa, when you talk about the Garden Champions, the Nourish Child, I mean, there are so many organizations and there's so many corporates. I mean, I'm thinking about the food security project that PepsiCo, for example, does. And it feels to me, or Kellanova, the former Kellogg's, it feels to me that there should be huge support from those kinds of organizations as well.
Not at the moment. So we're going there, at the moment. Not at the moment. At the moment, we are supported by our community in the Deep South at large. We interact with our neighborhood and opportunities that are created by tourism industry by sending their guests towards our way. And by word of mouth, by telling our story, and then the guests, they go to back to their countries and they become our ambassadors. They fundraise, they make their own birthday parties as our fundraising events, and then that comes our way. As a newly established organization, we are getting there to know exactly what is happening in South Africa, what is there for us, where can we tap in. Also, to mention the challenges of being a new organization is that South Africa's policy in terms of NGOs is very tight and strictly in getting the right documents. So if you are going to talk about the organizations that you have mentioned, they will want me to have the PBO, the SARS, this and that and that. And I don't want to dwell more. That's still the challenge.
Yeah. So diverse challenges with regards to that, to the policies and the legal issues around it as well.
What's lovely, Michelle, though, is that you can cut through that if you work in a localized economy, as is being done here, which is so beautiful. where you do partner with the suburbs around you and the businesses around you. It's that kind of localization you see happening. If you just go to the website and look at the Mussy Creative Hub and what they require and those wonderful children and just the kind of work Yolisa does, giving dignity to children, boys and girls, and looking at these levels, this is a kind of strength of character and commitment that is beautiful and must be celebrated and supported in every way. Just go and have a look. And I mean, if people come next week, they'll also see those. Just, you know, to me, recycling of garbage is the ultimate resistance to show people absolutely how you make something beautiful out of something ugly. And all of those things just are so, they're good for the soul.
Let's put that website out, MassyCreativeHub.org, MassyCreativeHub.org, if you want to go. Marion, the time is up already. It just feels like it rushes away. You've got 30 seconds to inspire us, fire us, and fire us up and tell us where to go from here.
All right. Well, basically, you know, we're not who the politicians say we are. Our country is not the politicians. There are more of us than there are of them. And ourselves are essentially, I think, good selves. And when we become bad selves, it's because someone's made us angry or taken things away. And we need to reconnect with each other in a world where money is the only thing that matters and that drives everyone's ambitions. Let's stop that. Because if you do the thing you're meant to do in the world, the money will come.
Marion Tam, our guest for today, thank you so much for joining us. Inspirational. And I loved what you said about negative positivity or was a great way to look at it. Pessimistic optimism, which I thought was excellent. So let's look at it that way. It's 10 o'clock. It's time for the news. No longer good morning. Now, goodbye. Independent.